get back now to 1938.
Okay, 1938.
And you're now moving back to France.
Good. We are moving back to France. That wasn't so easy. First came the 9th of November.
Right. That's right.
And that was, my brother's birthday was on the 9th of November, which was a Wednesday, I believe. And during that night, my father was in France. My mother was in her bedroom. My brother was in his bedroom, and I was in my bedroom. And our maid, there was a sleeping maid for everybody. You didn't have to be very rich, but that's how it was. And we lived in a house that had two apartments, one on the ground floor, one higher up. They were identical. It was my grandmother's brand new built house. And we lived downstairs, she lived upstairs. Each one had a maid. When the Germans came in, they never went upstairs. They came into our apartment. They took my brother and myself into my mother's bedroom. We were in pajamas and barefoot. They locked the doors of that bedroom. Adjoining the bedroom was a bathroom, which had a bathtub, a shower, and two big sinks and a toilet. They opened every faucet, and we were locked into the bedroom. They never touched us. They never saw us again. That was the only time they saw us. And by the time they left, hours later, there was water in the bedroom, but that wasn't so bad. The bad part was that that was the front door. Where you sit was a bathroom. Next to the bathroom was where we were. In the hallway were lots of built-in closets, which was the newest thing you could have in a house. Everybody had armoires, you know. And those closets, besides other things, had all the good dishes.
Right.
There was a lot of entertaining of brewers from France, from Denmark, from you name it. And there was the good dishes. They were all there. All the crystal, the Limoges, you name it. However, this was all in shards on the floor. The whole way. We only had slippers. When it was all over, after they had left, we opened the door. We had no way of getting any place. And the phone naturally was cut. So after, this is not in sequence, but after a while, in comes a very good friend of mine with her mother. We went to school together, even though she was a year older, but she was left back a year, with her mother. They owned a commercial laundry. They said they heard that things had been going on, Christian, of course, and they came over to see whether we were okay, because they couldn't call us on the telephone. And they came in, and they just said, just stay put. Half an hour later, they had an armful of clothes for the three of us and shoes. And that was the last time I was in that house. I don't think anything had left. I don't think anybody took anything out. They only destroyed. From the violin to the piano to everything that was hanging in closets, that was in drawers, window drapes, there were carpeting, just destroyed, not taken.
It's so interesting because it's very similar to the Cultural Revolution.
Right. Mm-hmm. Same idea.
The exact same stories. Mm-hmm. That was in China. In like 1966 or something.
And we never really found out, I don't think anybody did, how this all happened. But the stories were that there was the SA, that they were called to the marketplace, a very famous market in Nuremberg, very famous. And they were indoctrinated, they were told what to do, they were given access, they were given liquor, and they were told where to go and what to do. There was nothing left intact. At my grandmother upstairs, they never went there. So the few things that I still have here that come from nowhere, they were in my grandmother's place.
And they didn't do anything to your mother either, right? They didn't.
They didn't touch us. Okay. I never saw them. Mm-hmm. Never saw them. They locked us into that bedroom. So that was Christmas night.
Okay, so.
Now, during that night, I had an uncle and aunt. I had other relatives. They also lived in a house. And they came to that house, and the bedroom was upstairs. They came upstairs. They picked up my uncle, who was about as tall as you are. And they threw him over the banister. It was a nice villa. There was nobody else there, just they. And he landed on the marble floor in the lobby at the front door, and he was dead. And then they picked up my aunt, but she landed, it sounds gruesome, on top of him.
On top of him.
They left her for dead, but she wasn't dead. She was complete, her face, she landed on her face, was totally cut up and everything, it was terrible. And eventually she got to there was one Jewish,
clinic?
Yeah, no, just a...
doctor? Medical?
Hospital.
Hospital.
Okay.
She landed there, Jewish hospital. And my mother stayed with her until May. We, meaning my brother and I, and my grandmother got papers to leave at the end of December. That's when we got the papers to get out of Germany. You couldn't just leave. You had to leave everything there, but you needed papers. You were allowed to leave with sort of a suitcase that big, like an overnight little thing. Mm-hmm. So on the 21st of December, my grandmother, my brother, who is younger than I, and I, we left, and my father was in Paris, and he had rented a small apartment for us. My mother could have had the same papers, but she wouldn't leave my aunt my aunt had two sons, grown up, my cousins, much older, who had already left and had entered the Foreign Legion in Africa. That was an option for young Jewish German boys, men. And they did that. They were promised to, when everything was over and they were let go, to have French citizen papers and a changed name. That was a promise. Written. Of course, when they were in Africa, when that all disbanded and they were just told, go, they left with their German Jewish names and no papers. They landed in Auschwitz much later. And that aunt, who now had a dead husband and two sons who were in Africa, and she was so badly messed up, and there was nobody else, and my mother said, I'll stay. It was my father's sister, so my mother was a sister-in-law. And my grandmother somehow never forgave her daughter, my mother, that she chose to stay with her sister-in-law and left us. You know. And that went through the whole thing in a civilized way, but there were always that. And since we lived for years, condensed, all of us, meaning my parents, my mother's mother, my grandmother, my father's sister, and my brother and I, we lived like so, in a little space, all the time together. It was very difficult, because my grandmother resented all the time that my mother stayed in Nuremberg, but we managed. And when we first came to Paris, my father had rented a little apartment for us, and my grandmother was always sick. In Germany already, she was not a well person. My brother was sent to a school right away, where he came home every Friday night, and he spent Saturday and Sunday with us, and then he went back.
So it was sort of like a boarding school.
Something like every weekend.
Totally, right.
every Saturday night was a catastrophe because he said he was sick and he had this and that. He didn't want to go back to school. He was so unhappy. I had to stay with my grandmother. My father was constantly traveling, constantly. He was hardly ever there. My grandmother knew a very broken French, but she stayed in her room, in her bed. As I said, she was already always sick in Germany, and she stayed that way. When she came to America, she was never sick anymore. I was there with her.
How are you, like you said, your grandmother resented your mother's decision.
Yep.
What about you?
She never said anything about it. She just, we knew.
Right.
Never.
But did you feel like
did you resent
it was fine?
Her?
No. No. That was the way it was.
Right.
It was accepted. And also when I was just 15, I turned 15 in December,
right,
just before we left.
Right.
And as I said, I was still a child. Then I had to grow up within a week. And we didn't question things. That was the way it was. So anyway, my mother was not with us. My father was always traveling. My grandmother was always sick. And she didn't speak French well enough to do anything much. I had had 1 year of French in school, and it wasn't taught as well as it's taught now, so I don't know what language you take, but I knew less.
She takes English.
My grandson takes Chinese. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
Anyway, it wasn't easy. It was absolutely difficult. It was not a good... It was a miserable apartment, and that also didn't help. You came in, and there was a little tiny entrance hall, and on the right side was a table, and it had a two burner on the table, two burner. No water, no sink there. The only water was in the bathroom, but you first had to go through the living room into my grandmother's bedroom where she lived, and then you got to the bathroom where the water was. If you wanted a cup of tea, you had to bring it back to. My father didn't know any better. He had never seen a kitchen. In Germany, I mean, I'm sure he never was in the kitchen because the maid cooked. Nobody did anything about sending me to school. My father was hardly ever there. My grandmother didn't know anything about it. She needed me for help. She needed me to go downstairs and get some food. I didn't know how to cook, and I didn't cook. And she didn't cook. But you had already then... At every corner was a deli, just like here. You could buy what you wanted to eat.
And at that point, money was still not a problem.
Money was never a problem, and that's the only reason that we are here. It's a shame to say.
It's real.
But it's real. Money was no problem. Not even to grease hands, palms,
right,
or whatever you call it. And you had to constantly. So anyway... eventually,
Before we leave that, do you remember any particular greasing of the palms that your dad did, or that
no,
you?
No, we didn't
I'm
know
sure
that.
Tell.
We
I'm
weren't
sure
told.
Oh, you just you.
Those things you found out much later when you got older.
Okay.
They didn't want. I don't think my parents wanted to take a chance of telling us.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I like questions.
And I like asking them.
Yeah. So I had nothing to do. I didn't know anybody. There was a friend of my mother's who once called. I don't think there was a phone in the apartment. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. But I'm not sure about that. And she called once and said she would like to meet me or take me out for lunch or something. And so we'll meet at the entrance or exit of such and such a subway, which is not too far from where I live, and we'll meet there. And that was all done in German, because my French wasn't very good. And so at the appointed time, I went to the subway. Now, has anybody ever been in Paris? I mean...
Oui.
Rond-Point des Champs-Élysées and Marbeuf is the same station,
right. Mm-hmm.
But the... To get into it or out of it is like a mile away.
Right.
Okay? That's where we met. I didn't know there were two ways. Okay, so she wasn't there. Where I was, she wasn't. So I found a telephone booth. I think you had a jeton at the time or just some kind of a coin. I don't remember that. But I managed to dial her number. Take the phone.
It's a good thing she wasn't Julie because she wouldn't have answered.
And some woman is on the phone. And I tell her my predicament. First in German, and there was no reaction. And then in my very poor French, I tell her what the problem is. And then she again, that woman said something which I couldn't understand. And then I said, could you, in French, could you please speak much slower because my French is very poor and I don't understand. She said the same thing. And after a while, I started to cry in the telephone booth. It was a recorded message. In Nuremberg, there were no recorded messages.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Not a recorded message, nothing.
Of course.
So I got out of the telephone booth and I was crying. And I couldn't find her. And eventually I went home. And then she eventually called. And I mean, I didn't know that that it's the same metro station, which is two totally different exits. Yeah. She was not specific enough. And I didn't know that there could be a recorded message on a telephone. And things like this happened all the time. And in May of 1939, my mother finally came with my aunt. She was well enough to travel, and she had big scars everywhere, but that was okay.
She was able to get out in May of 39.
She could have gotten out in December.
Right,
we got
right.
Out.
Right, but she...
Yes.
They both got out. She wouldn't leave her alone. So they both got out, and we first moved. That's when we moved to a much more decent place, Avenue Mozart, in a big apartment building, and we moved there. It wasn't the greatest, but it was okay. And then a few months later, we moved into some place I would move into now. It was an apartment in Neuilly, which is outside of Paris, and it was a modern high-rise, six floors up, and we rented an apartment there, and only one side of it was called Boulevard de la Seine because there was only one row of buildings, and on the other side of the street was the Seine. And when you walked to the corner, you were at the Bois de Boulogne.
Sweet.
Nice neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very nice. And we moved there with totally new everything, new furniture, new everything. We had nothing. I came with a little suitcase like this, so did my parents, my mother. People who left before we did, a lot of people did, all my friends practically, they could take all their furniture in a lift, and it was shipped to wherever. They took everything.
That's amazing.
We had nothing. And then I started to go to school from there. It was beautiful. Everything was beautiful, wonderful.